Don't you feel it? Something's changing. Something's happening.
Of course I feel it. For me, everything is changing. His eyes are wary, as though he still feels watched.
Something big, Kesha,
he says, and then he whispers softly.
I think the society is having trouble with their war on the borders.
What makes you say that?
I have a feeling, he says. From what you told me about your mother, from the shortage of officials during free rec hours, and there are changes coming at work. I can tell.
He glances at me and I duck my head.
Do you want to tell me why you were there?
He asks gently. I swallow. I've been wondering when he would want to know. It was a real life sort. I had to sort the workers into two groups.
I see,
he says, and he waits to see if I will say more. And I wish I could, but I can't get the words out. Instead, I say, you haven't given me any more of the story. What happened after the officials came to get you? When did that happen? I know it wasn't long ago because... My voice trails off. Kai ties a red cloth on the tree slowly, methodically, and then he looks up. After years of seeing only surface emotions from him, the new and deeper ones startle me sometimes. The expression on his face now is not one I have seen before. What's wrong? I ask.
I'm afraid,
he says simply.
Of what you're going to think.
About what? What happened? After everything he's been through, Kai's afraid of what I might think?
It was in the spring. They came to talk with me at work, pulled me aside into a room there. They asked if I ever wondered what my life would be like if I weren't an aberration.
Kai's jaw tightens at this, and I feel sorry for him. He glances up and sees it on my face, and his jaw becomes even more set. He does not want my pity, so I turn my face away to listen.
I said I never thought about that much. I said I didn't worry about things I couldn't change. Then they told me there had been a mistake. My data had been entered into the matching pool.
Your data? I ask, surprised. But the official told me it was a mistake on the microcard, Kai's picture where it shouldn't be. She told me that he hadn't been entered into the pool. She lied. The error was much bigger than she said it was. Kai keeps talking.
I'm not even a full citizen. They said the whole incident was completely irregular.
He smiles, a bitter twist to his mouth that it hurts me to see.
Then they showed me a picture. The girl who would have been my match if I weren't what I am.
Kai swallows. Who was she? I ask. My voice sounds harsh, grating. Don't say that it was me. Don't say that it was me, because then I will know that you saw me because they told you to look.
You,
he says. And now I see. Kai's love for me, which I thought was pure and unblemished by any officials or data or matching pools, is not. They have touched even this. I feel like something is dying, ruined beyond repair. If the officials orchestrated our whole love affair, the one thing in my life I thought happened in spite of them. I can't finish the thought. The forest around me blurs into green, and without the red flags marking the way, I would not know my way down. As it is, I tear at them wildly, pulling them off the branches.
Kesha,
he says behind me.
Kesha, why does it matter?
I shake my head.
Kesha,
he calls after me.
You're keeping something from me, too.
A whistle sounds sharp and clear below us. We have come so far, but never made it to the top.
I thought you were eating lunch at the Arboretum,
Xander says. The two of us sit together in the meal hall at second school. I changed my mind, I tell him. I wanted to eat here today. The nutrition personnel frowned at me when I asked for one of the extra meals they keep on hand. But after checking my data, they handed over the meal without further comment. They must have seen that I hardly ever do this. Or maybe there's some other flag on my data that I can't think about right now, not after the revelation from Kai. I realize how much food my container holds this time, now that it's a general portion and not labeled specifically for me. My portions have been getting smaller. What purpose does that serve? Am I too fat? I look down at my arms and legs, strong from all the hiking. I don't think so. And I realize again how distracted my parents must be. Under normal circumstances, they would have noticed my smaller portions and had plenty to say to the nutrition personnel about them. Things are wrong everywhere. I push back my chair. Will you come with me? Xander glances at his watch.
Where? Class starts soon.
I know, I say. We're not going far. Please?
All right,
Xander says, looking at me with a puzzled expression on his face. I lead him down the hall to the classroom area and push open the door at the end. There, in a small area like a courtyard, is the applicable sciences botany pond. Xander and I are alone. I have to tell him. This is Xander. He deserves to know about Kai, and he deserves to hear it from me, not from an official in a green space, today or some other day. Drawing a deep breath, I look down at the pond. It isn't blue like the pool where we swim. This water is brownish-green under its silvery surface, messy with life. Xander, I say. My voice is quiet as if we were hidden in trees on the hill. I have something to tell you.
I'm listening,
he says, waiting, looking at me. Always steady, always Xander. It's better to say this quickly before I find myself unable to say it at all. I think I'm falling in love with Kai Markham. I speak so softly, I almost can't hear my own voice. But Xander understands. Almost before I've finished, he's shaking his head and saying,
No.
Putting up his hand to stop me before I say more. But it isn't either of those gestures or that word that makes me fall silent. It's the hurt in his eyes. And what they are saying isn't no. It's why.
No,
Xander says again, turning away from me. I can't bear that, so I move in front of him, try to see him too. He won't look at me for a long moment. I don't know what to say. I don't dare to touch him. All I can do is stand there, hoping he will look back. When he does, the pain is still there. And something else, too. Something that doesn't look like surprise. It looks like recognition. Did some part of him know this was happening? Is that why he challenged Kai to the games? I'm sorry, I say, rushing. You're my friend. I love you, too. It is the first time I've said those words to him, and it comes out all wrong. The sound of it, hurried and strained, makes the words seem like less than they are.
You love me, too?
Xander says, his voice cold.
What game are you playing?
I'm not playing a game, I whisper. I do love you, but it's different. Xander says nothing. An hysterical giggle rises up in me. It's exactly like the last time we had an argument and he refused to speak to me. Years ago, when I decided that I didn't like playing the games as much as I once had, Xander was mad.
But no one else plays like you, he said.
And then, when I wouldn't give in, he wouldn't talk to me. I still wouldn't play. It took 2 weeks before our peace was brokered. That day he saw me jump into the pool from the diving board after Grandfather jumped first. I surfaced, frightened and exhilarated, and Xander swam over to congratulate me. In the rush of the moment, all was forgotten. What would Grandfather think of this jump I'm taking? Would this be one time he would tell me to hang on to the edge with all my might? Would he say to cling to the side of the pool until my fingers became bloody and scraped,
Or would he say that it was all right to let go? Xander, the officials played a game with me. The morning after the match banquet, I put the microcard in the port. Your face came up on the screen, and it disappeared. I swallow. And then someone else's face appeared instead. It was Kai's.
Kai Markham?
Xander asks, disbelieving. Yes.
But Kai's not your match, Xander says. He can't be, because...
Because why? I ask. Does Xander know about Kai's status after all? How?
Because I am, Xander says.
For a long moment, neither of us speak. Xander doesn't look away, and I think that I can't stand this. If I had a green tablet in my mouth now, I'd bite, taste the bitterness before the calm. I think back to that day in the meal hall when he told me Kai could be trusted. Xander believed that, and he believed he could trust me. What does he think of us both now? Xander leans closer, blue eyes holding mine, hand hovering next to mine. I close my eyes, both to shut out the pain in his gaze and to stop myself from turning my hand up, weaving my fingers through his, leaning forward, meeting his lips. I open my eyes and look at Xander again.
I came up on the screen too, Kasia,
he says quietly.
But he was the one you chose to see.
And then, quick as a player making his last move, he turns away and pushes through the doors. He leaves me behind. Not at first, I want to tell him, and I still see you. One by one, the people I can talk to have gone. Grandfather, my mother, and now Xander. You are strong enough to go without it. Grandfather told me about the green tablet. But Grandfather, am I strong enough to go without you? Without Xander? The sun shines down on me where I have chosen to stand. No trees, no shade, no height from which I can look down on what I've done. And even if there were, I cannot see for the tears. Chapter 28. At home that night, I take out the green tablet again. I know what it can do for me. I saw what it did for M. It will make me calm. That word, calm, sounds impossibly beautiful, gloriously uncomplicated, a water-smooth word, a word that can take the edge away from fear, gloss it over, make it shiny. Calm, gentle. I put the tablet back in the container and snap it shut, turning to another kind of green next to me, my framed piece of dress in its bit of glass. I wrap my hand in one of my socks and then press down hard. A faint snap. I lift my hand. It's harder to break something than you would think. I wonder if the society is finding this to be true of me as well. I put my hand down again, push harder. It would be easy if no one watched, if no one could hear me, if these walls weren't so thin and my life weren't so transparent. I could throw the glass against the wall, smash it with a rock, destroy with abandon and noise. I think the glass would make a glittery sound when it broke. I would like to see it burst into a million pieces and shine all the way down. But instead, I have to be careful. Another long silvery crack runs across the surface of the glass. Underneath, the smooth ice cream cloth is undisturbed. Carefully, I pull the pieces of glass apart, lift the largest one up, and pull out the fabric. I take off the sock and hold up my hand. I'm not even cut, not even bleeding. After the scratchy wool of my sock, the silk feels cool in my hand, luxurious like water. My birthday began with the water, I think as I fold the material and I smile. After I've tucked both the fabric and the tablet container into the pocket of tomorrow's plain clothes, I climb into bed with that image in my mind. Water. I will drift away tonight on my dreams. That way the data tags won't pick up a thing in my mind except me, Kasia, floating on the waves, letting them carry my weight for a little while. The officer is not at hiking today. Instead, we have a junior official who bites his words out quick and fast, as though he thinks this is how the officers speak. His eyes sweep over us, happy with the power to oversee, to direct. The decision has been made to shorten leisure activities this summer. Today's your last day of hiking. Take down as many of the red flags as you can and knock down the cairns. I glance over at Kai, who does not seem surprised. I try not to let my gaze linger on his face, try not to look for answers in his eyes. We were both polite and normal on the air train ride to the Arboretum this morning. We both know how to perform when we're being watched. All the time I wondered what he thought of me running away from him on the hill yesterday. What he will think of me once he finds out about the sort, and if he will accept the gift I want to give him today. Or if he will do to me what I did to Xander and turn me away.
Why? Lon asks in a whine. We spent half the summer marking these paths.
I think I see a faint smile on Kai's face, and I realize that he likes Lon. Who asks the questions no one else will ask, even though he never gets an answer? It strikes me that this is a kind of bravery, a wearing down kind of bravery, but bravery nonetheless.
Don't ask questions, the official snaps at Lon. Get started.
And so, for the last time, Kai and I begin to climb the hill. When we are far enough onto our own path that no one else can see us, Kai grabs my hand as I reach to untie a red cloth from one of the shrubs.
Forget it all, he says. We're going to the top.
Our eyes meet. I've never seen him look so reckless. I open my mouth to say something, but he interrupts me.
Unless you don't want to try.
There's a challenge in his voice I haven't heard before. His voice isn't cruel, but he's not just curious. He needs to know the answer. What I do now tells him something about me. He doesn't say anything about yesterday. His face is open, his eyes alight, his body tense, every muscle saying, "It's time. Now." I want to try, I tell him. To prove it, I lead the way along the path we've marked together. It isn't long before I feel his hand brush mine, and when our fingers intertwine, I feel the same urgency he does. We have to make it to the top. I don't turn around, but I hold on tight. As we break into the last part of the forest, the part we haven't charted, I stop. Wait, I say. If we're really going to clear this hill, I want to pull out the last tangles and twists so we can stand on the top free and open. Behind the patience on Kai's face, I see worry. Worry that we aren't going to make it in time. Even now, the whistle could be shrilling below us and I wouldn't hear it over the beating of our hearts and the sound of our breathing in and out, the same air. I was scared yesterday.
Of what?
That we fell in love because of the officials, I say. They told you about me. They told me about you the morning after my match when your face came up on my microcard by mistake. We knew each other all along, but we never did anything about it until... I can't finish my sentence, but Kai knows what I mean.
You don't throw something away just because they predicted it,
he protests. But I don't want to be defined by their choices, I say.
You're not,
he says.
You never have to be.
Sisyphus and the rock, I say, remembering. Grandfather would have understood that story. He rolled the rock, he lived the life the society planned for him, but his thoughts were always his own. Kai smiles.
Exactly. But we,
he tugs at my hand gently,
are going to make it to the top, and maybe even stand there for a minute. Come on.
I have to tell you something else, I say.
Is it about the sort?
He asks. Yes. Kai interrupts me.
They told us. I'm part of the group that's going to get a new work position. I already know.
Does he know? Does he know his life will be shorter if he keeps working where he does now? Does he know he was right on the line between those who stayed and those who moved on? Does he know what I did? He sees the questions in my eyes.
I know you had to sort us into two groups. I know I was probably right in the middle.
Do you want to know what I did?
I can guess, he says. They told you about the life expectancy and the poisons, didn't they? That's why you put me where you did.
Yes, I say. You know about the poisons, too?
Of course. Most of us figure it out. But none of us are in a position to complain. Our lives are still much longer here than they'd be in the outer provinces.
Kai, it's hard to ask, but I have to know. Are you leaving? He looks up, above us, fierce and golden. The sun climbs the sky.
I'm not sure. They haven't told us yet, but I know we don't have much time.
When we reach the top of the hill, it feels completely different in some ways, and not in others. He is still Kai. I am still Kasia. But we stand together in a place where neither of us has been before. It's the same world, gray and blue and green and gold, that I've seen all my life. The same world I saw from Grandfather's window and from the top of the little hill, but I am higher now. If I had wings, I could spread them. I could soar.
I want you to have this,
Kai says, handing me the artifact. I don't know how to use it, I say, not wanting to reveal how much I want to accept his gift, how deeply I ache to hold and have something that is part of his story and part of him.
I think Xander can teach you,
he says gently, and I draw in my breath. Is he telling me goodbye? Is he telling me to trust in Xander, to be with Xander? Before I can ask, Kai pulls me close and his words are in my ear, warm and whispered.
It will help you find me, he says, if I ever do go anywhere.
My face fits perfectly into the spot against his shoulder, near his neck, where I can both hear his heart and smell his skin. I'm safe here, too. Some essential part of me is safer with Kai than anywhere else. Kai presses another piece of paper into my hand.
The last part of my story,
he says.
Will you save it? Don't look at it yet.
Why?
Just wait,
he says, voice quiet, strong.
Wait a little while.
I have something for you too, I say, pulling away just a little, reaching into my pocket. I give him the scrap of fabric, the green silk from my dress. He holds it up to my face to see how I looked that night at the match banquet.
Beautiful,
he says gently. He puts his arms around me on the top of the hill. From where we stand, I see clouds and trees and the dome of City Hall and the tiny houses of the boroughs in the distance. For one brief moment, I see it all, this world of mine. And then I look back at Kai. Kai says,
Kasia,
and closes his eyes, and I close mine too so that I can meet him in the dark. I feel his arms around me and the smoothness of the green silk as he presses his hand against the small of my back and pulls me closer, closer.
Kasia,
he says once more, softly, so close his lips meet mine. At last. At last. I think he might have meant to say something more, but when our lips touch, there is no need, for once, for any words at all. Chapter 29. There is screaming in the burrow again, and this time it is human. I open my eyes. It is so early in the morning that the sky is more black than blue.
the slice of dawn at the edge of the horizon more promise than reality. My door slams open, and in the rectangle of light, I see my mother.
Kasia,
she says in relief, and she turns back to call to my father. She's fine.
Bram, too,
he calls back. And then we are all in the hall, going toward the front door, because someone on our street is screaming, and the sound of it is so uncommon it cuts deep. We may not hear the sound of pain often in Maple Tree Burrow, but the instinct to try to help has not yet been matched out of us. My father throws open the door, and we all look out. The streetlights seem dimmer, the officials' coats dull and gray. Two of them walk fast, a figure between them, behind them, a few more people, officers. And someone else screaming. Even in the muted glow of the streetlights, I recognize her. Ada Markham. Someone who has borne pain before and who bears it again now as she chases the figure surrounded by officials and officers. Kai.
Kai!
For the first time in my life, I run as fast as I can in public. No tracker to slow me, no branches to stop me. My feet fly over grass, over cement. I cut across the lawns of my neighbors and through their flowers, trying to catch up to the lead group moving toward the air train stop. An officer detaches from them and hurries toward Ada. She's drawing too much attention. Other houses have open doors and people standing on the steps, watching. I run faster. My feet hit the sharp, cool grass of Em's lawn. A few houses more.
Kasia!
Em calls from her doorway.
Where are you going?
Kai hasn't heard me over Ada's screams. They're almost to the steps that go up to the air train. When they walk under the light at the bottom, I see they've locked Kai's hands together. Just like they did in the picture.
Kai!
I scream again, and his head snaps up. He turns his face toward me, but I am not close enough to see his eyes. I have to see his eyes. Another officer breaks away from the group and heads in my direction. I should have waited until I was closer before I called out, but I am still fast. I'm almost there. Part of my mind tries to process what is happening. Are they taking him away for his new work position? If so, why so early in the morning? Why is Ada so upset? Wouldn't she be happy to know he has a new chance? Something better than washing foilware. Why is he wearing hand locks? Did he try to fight them? Did they see the kiss? Is that why this is happening? I see the air train sliding along the tracks toward the station, but it's not the air train we usually ride, the silvery white one. It's the charcoal gray long-distance train, the kind that only departs from the city center. I can hear it coming, too. It's heavier, louder than the white one. Something isn't right. And if I didn't know that already, the word Kai calls to me as they push him up the steps confirms everything. Because there, in front of everyone, all his survival instincts leave him and a different instinct takes over. He calls my name.
Kasia!
In that one word, I hear it all. That he loves me. That he's afraid. And I hear the goodbye he was trying to tell me yesterday on the hill. He knew. He's not just leaving for a new work position. He's going somewhere, and he doesn't think he'll come back. I hear footsteps behind me, soft on the grass, and footsteps in front of me, hard on the metal. I glance back and see an officer hurrying toward me, forward. And an official rushes down the metal stairs. Ada's no longer screaming. They want to stop me the way they stopped her. I can't get to him. Not this way. Not now. I can't push past the officer on the stairs. I'm not strong enough to fight them or fast enough to outrun them. Do not go gentle. I don't know if Kai speaks the words to my mind somehow, or if I think them to myself, or if Grandfather might be out there somewhere in this almost night, calling words on the wind, words with wings like angels. I veer to the side of the platform, feet fast on the cement. Kai sees what I'm doing and he twists away, a sharp movement that earns him a second of freedom before their hands clamp down on him again. It is enough. For a moment, he leans over the edge of the platform and I see what I need to see. I see his eyes, bright with life and fire, and I know he won't stop fighting. Even if it's the kind of quiet fight on the inside that you can't always see, and I won't stop fighting either. The calls of the officials and the sound of the air train sliding to a stop will cover my words. Kai won't be able to hear anything I say. So in the middle of all the noise, I point to the sky. I hope he understands what I mean because I mean so many things. My heart will always fly his name. I won't go gentle. I'll find a way to soar like the angels in the stories, and I will find him. And I know he understands as he looks straight at me, deep into my eyes. His lips move silently, and I know what he says. The words of a poem that only two people in the world know. Tears well up, but I blink them away, because if there is one moment in my life that I want to see clearly, this is it. The officer reaches me first, grabbing my arm and pulling me back.
"Leave her alone,"
my father says. I had no idea he could run so fast.
"She's done nothing."
My mother and Bram hurry across the grass toward us. Xander and his family follow behind.
"She's causing a disturbance,"
the officer says grimly.
"Of course she is,"
my father retorts.
"They've taken her childhood friend away in the early hours of the morning while his mother screams. What's going on?"
I hear how loud my father's voice is as he dares to ask this question, and I dart a glance over at my mother to see how she feels about this. Her face shows nothing but pride as she looks at him. To my surprise, Xander's father speaks up.
"Where are they taking the boy?"
A white-coated official takes charge, his voice loud so that everyone gathering can hear. His words are clipped and formal.
"I'm sorry your morning has been disrupted. This young man received a new work position, and we were merely picking him up to transport him. Since the position is outside of Oriya Province, his mother became overwrought and upset."
But why all the officers? Why all the officials? Why the handlocks? The official's explanation makes no sense, but after a short pause, everyone nods, accepting it. Except Xander. He opens his mouth as if to speak, but then he glances over at me and closes it. All the adrenaline from trying to catch up to Kai leaves me, and a horrible realization begins to sink in. Wherever Kai went, it's because of me. Because of my sort, or because of my kiss. Either way, this is my fault.
"Lies,"
Patrick Markham says. Everyone turns to look at him. Even standing there in his sleep clothes, his face drawn and thin from all he has suffered, he still has a quiet dignity, a quality no one can touch. It is something I have only seen in one other person. Though Patrick and Kai are not related by blood, they both possess the same kind of strength.
"The officials told Kai and other workers,"
he says, looking at me,
"that they'd been given a new work position, a better one. But in reality, they're sending them to the outer provinces to fight."
I reel backward as if I've been struck, and my mother reaches out her hand to steady me. Patrick is still talking.
"The war with the enemy isn't going well. They need more people to fight. All the original villagers are dead. All of them."
He pauses, speaks as if to himself.
"I should have known they'd take aberrations first. I should have known Kai would be on the list. I thought since we'd been through so much..."
His voice shakes. Ada turns on him, furious, forgiving.
"We forgot sometimes, but he never did. He knew it was coming. Did you see him fight? Did you see his eyes when they took him away?
She throws her arms around Patrick's neck, and he holds her close, her sobs ringing out in the cool morning.
He's going to die. It's a death sentence back there.
Then she pulls away, screams at the officials.
He's going to die!
Two of the officers move quickly, pinning Patrick's and Ada's hands behind their backs and pulling the Markhams away. Patrick's head snaps back as one of them gags him to keep him from talking, and they do the same to Ada to stifle her screams. I've never seen or heard of officials using such force. Don't they realize that doing so gives truth to Patrick's and Ada's words? An air car descends near us and disgorges more officials. The officers push the Markhams toward it, and Ada reaches for her husband's hand. Their fingers miss by centimeters, and she is denied that touch, the one thing in the world that could comfort her now. I close my eyes. I wish I couldn't hear her screams echoing in my ears and the words I know I will never forget. He's going to die. I wish my mother could take me back inside my house, tuck me back up in bed like she did when I was a child. When I watched night fall outside my window without a worry. Excuse me. I know that voice. It's my official, the one from the green space. Next to her stands an official with the insignia of the highest level of government, 3 golden stars shining visibly under the streetlight. A hush falls over us.
Everyone, please take out your tablet containers,
he says pleasantly.
Remove the red tablet.
We all obey. My hand closes on the small container with its 3 tablets secured inside my pocket. Blue and red and green. Life and death and oblivion always at my fingertips.
Now, keep the red tablets and hand Official Standler.
He gestures to my official, who holds a square plastic receptacle.
Your containers. Shortly after we've finished here, you'll receive new containers and a new set of tablets.
Once again, we obey. I drop the little metal cylinder in with the others, but I do not meet my official's eyes.
We'll need you to take your red tablets. Official Standler and I will make sure you do. There's nothing to worry about.
Officers seem to multiply. They walk down the street, keeping everyone who stayed in their houses where they are and isolating the dozen or so of us who stand near the air train stop. The handful of us who know what happened today in Mapletree Borough and across the country. I imagined other scenes went more smoothly than this. Likely none of the other apparitions had parents or family high up enough to know what was really happening. And even Patrick Markham could do nothing to save his son. And it's all my fault. I didn't play God or angel. I played official. I let myself think that I knew what was best and changed someone's life accordingly. It doesn't matter whether or not the data backed me up. In the end, I made the decision myself. And the kiss? I can't let myself think about the kiss. I look down at the red tablet, so small in my hand. Even if it means death, I think I would welcome that now. But wait. I promised Kai. I pointed to the sky and promised him, and now, moments later, I'm going to give up? I drop the tablet on the ground, trying to be discreet. For a second, I see it small and red in the grass, and I remember what Kai said about red being the color of birth and renewal. To a new beginning, I say to myself. And I shift my feet the tiniest bit so that I crush the tablet. It bleeds beneath my feet. It reminds me of the time I saw Kai's face across the crowded room at the game center, just as my feet crushed the lost tablets beneath me. Except now, when I look up, he is nowhere to be found. No one has followed the orders yet, even though the official is the highest-ranking one we've ever seen, and he's ordered us to do it. We've heard years of rumors about the red tablet.
Would anyone like to go first?
I will, my mother says, stepping forward.
No, I say, but a look from my father stops me. I know what he's trying to tell me. She's doing this for us, for you. And somehow, he knows it's going to be all right.
I will too,
he says, moving to stand next to her. Together, as we all watch, they both swallow their tablets down. The official checks my parents' mouths and nods briefly.
They dissolve within seconds,
he tells us.
Too quickly for you to try and throw it back up, but it's unnecessary anyway. It won't hurt you. All it does is clear your mind.
All it does is clear your mind. Of course. I know now why we're going to take them. So we forget what happened to Kai. So we forget that the enemy is winning the war in the outer provinces, that the villagers there are all dead. And I realize why they didn't have us take the tablets when something happened to the first Markham boy. Because we needed to remember how dangerous anomalies can be. How vulnerable we would be without the society to keep them all away. Did they let that anomaly out on purpose? To remind us? What will they tell us happened to Kai later? What story will we all believe instead of his true one? Will we take the green tablet next, a calm after the forgetting? I don't want to be calm anymore. I don't want to forget. As much as it hurts, I have to hold on to the whole story of him, the painful parts too. My mother turns to look at me, and I worry I'll see blank eyes or a vacant, slack expression. But she looks fine. So does my father. Soon, everyone lines up, red tablets in their palms, ready to get this over with and go back to their lives. What will I do when they find out I got rid of mine? I glance down at the grass beneath my feet, almost expecting to see a tiny patch of it seared and obliterated, wiped clean. Instead, it looks exactly as it did before. I can't even see the red fragments in the grass. I must have crushed them completely. Bram looks terrified but excited. He's still not old enough to carry his own red tablet, so my father gives him the extra one from his container. My official starts checking people too. She moves closer and closer to me, but I can't take my eyes from Bram, and then from Em as she takes the tablet. For a moment, I remember my dream and I feel horror as I watch her. But nothing happens. Nothing that I can see, anyway. And then it is Xander's turn. He glances over and sees me watching him, and an expression crosses his face that is nothing but pain. I want to look away, but I don't. I watch as Xander nods to me and lifts the red tablet toward me, almost in a toast. Before I see him take it, someone blocks my view of everyone, and theirs of me. It's my official.
Let me see your tablet, please,
she says. I have it. I hold out my hand, but I don't open my palm. I think I almost see her smile. Even though I know she carries extra tablets, I've seen them. She doesn't offer me one yet. Her glance flickers down to the grass at my feet and then back up to my face. I lift my arm and pretend to put something in my mouth, and then I swallow, hard. And she moves on to the next person. Even though this is what I want, I hate her. She wants me to remember what happened here, what I've done. Chapter 30. When the darkness finally lifts, it is a flat, hot, steel-colored morning, a morning without dimension or depth. The houses around me could be the set for a showing. They could be pictures on a big screen. I feel that if I walk too far, I'll walk right into canvas or through a paper wall and then out into black nothing and the end of everything. Somehow I've run out of fear. I feel lethargic instead, which is almost worse. Why care about a flat planet populated by flat people? Who cares about a place where there is no Kai? This is one of the reasons I need Kai, I realize. Because when I am with him, I feel. But he is gone. I saw it happen. I made it happen. Did Sisyphus have to do this too? I wonder.
stop for a minute and concentrate on holding firm, on pushing the rock enough to keep it from rolling down and crushing him, before he could even think about trying to climb again? The red tablet took effect almost immediately after the officers and officials shepherded us home. The events of the past 12 hours have been wiped from my family's minds. Within the hour, a delivery of new containers and tablets arrived with a letter of explanation that ours were found to be defective and removed earlier this morning. Everyone else in my family accepts the explanation without question. They have other things to worry about. My mother is confused. Where did she put her datapod for work when she finished with it last night? Bram can't remember whether he finished writing his assignment on his scribe. Well, turn it on and check, honey, my mother says, flustered. My father looks a little blank too, but not as confused. I think he's experienced this before, possibly many times in his line of work. While the tablet still works, he seems less bewildered by the feeling of disorientation. Which is good, because the officials haven't finished with our family yet.
Private message for Molly Reyes, the generic voice from the port calls out.
My mother looks up, surprised.
I'll be late for work, she protests softly, although whoever sent this message can't hear her.
They also can't see her straighten her shoulders as she walks over to the port and puts on the earpiece. The screen darkens, the picture on it only visible from the exact spot in which she stands.
What now? Says Bram. Should I wait?
No, go on to school, my father tells him. We don't want you to be late.
On his way out the door, Bram complains,
I always miss everything.
I wish I could tell him that wasn't true. But then again, would I really want him to keep the memory of what happened this morning? Something happens to me when I look at Bram leaving our house, and things become real again. Bram is real. I am real. Kai is real, and I need to get started on finding him. Now. I'm going into the city for the morning, I tell my father.
Don't you have hiking?
He asks, and then he shakes his head as if to clear it.
Sorry, I remember. Summer leisure activities ended early this year, right? That's why Bram's already on his way to school instead of swimming. My mind's foggy this morning.
He doesn't seem surprised by that fact, and I think again that this is something that's happened to him before. And I remember how he let my mother take the red tablet first. Somehow he knew it wouldn't hurt her. They didn't assign us anything else to do yet to take the place of hiking, I tell my father. So I have time to go into the city before second school. This in itself is an oversight, another little hitch in the well-oiled machine of our society that proves something is wrong somewhere. My father doesn't answer. He stares at my mother, whose face is ashen and pale as she stares at the port screen.
Molly?
He says. You're not supposed to interrupt a private message, but he takes a few steps closer, and then closer again. Finally, when he puts his hand on her shoulder, she turns away from the screen.
This is my fault, my mother says,
and for the first time in my life, I see her look through my father, not at him, her gaze fixed on some distant point beyond him.
We've been relocated to the farmlands, effective immediately.
What?
My father asks. He shakes his head, glances back behind her at the port.
That's impossible. You submitted the report. You told the truth.
I suppose they don't want those of us who saw the rogue crops to continue working in positions of authority, my mother says. We know too much. We might be tempted to do the same. They'll put us out in the farmlands where we won't be in charge, where they can watch us and wear us out.
But at least, I say, trying to comfort her, we'll be closer to grandmother and grandfather.
Not the farmlands in Oria, my mother says. The farmlands in a different province. We leave tomorrow.
Then that blank, stunned gaze of hers shifts to my father, and I see her begin to feel again. I watch realization and emotion come back into her face.
As I see it happen to her, I feel a sense of urgency so strong I don't know if I can bear it. I have to find out where they sent Kai before we leave.
I've always wanted to live in the farmlands, my father says,
and my mother leans her head on his shoulder, too tired to cry, and too overcome to pretend that everything is all right.
But I did what I was supposed to do, she whispers. I did exactly what they asked.
It will be all right,
he whispers to my mother and to me. Maybe if I had taken the red tablet, I could believe him. Down the street, there's an official air car in front of the Markhams' house. Our borough has had entirely too much attention from the officials in the past few weeks. Em bounces out the door of her treeless house.
Did you hear?
She asks, excited.
The officials are gathering the Markhams' things. Patrick has been transferred to work in the central government. It's such an honor, and he's from our borough.
She frowns. It's too bad we didn't get to say goodbye to Kai. I'll miss him. I know, I say, and my heart aches, and I stop again under my stone, pushing back against the weight of being the only one who knows what really happened this morning. Except for a few select officials. And even they don't know that I know. Only two people truly know what took place, that I didn't take the red tablet. Me and my official. I have to go, I tell Em, and I start moving again toward the air train stop. I don't look back at the Markhams' house. Patrick and Ada gone for good, too. Have they been assigned aberration status or a quiet retirement somewhere far from here? Do they look around their new place with surprise, wondering what happened to their second son? I'll have to try to find them too, for Kai. But right now, I have to find Kai. There's only one place I can think of to look for information about where they might have sent him. On the ride to City Hall, I keep my head down. There are too many places I can't look. At the seats where Kai used to sit, at the floor of the air train car where he set his feet and kept his balance, always making it seem easy, natural. I can't bring myself to look out the windows at all, knowing that I might catch a glimpse of the hill where Kai and I stood yesterday, together. When the train stops to let more people on and a breeze wafts in, I wonder if the strips of red cloth that Kai and I left there flutter in the wind, signal flags of a new beginning, though not the kind we wanted. Finally, I hear the announcer's voice calling my destination, City Hall. My idea won't work. I know it the minute I stand on the steps of the hall for only the second time in my life. This is not the place of open doors and twinkling lights that welcomed me, invited me to catch a glimpse of my future. In the daylight, this is a place with armed guards, a place of business, a place where past and present are locked safe inside. They won't let me in, and even if they did, they wouldn't tell me anything. They might not know there was anything to tell. Even officials carry red tablets. Maybe even now, Patrick and Ada Markham are looking around at a new home, thinking about how happy they are that Kai stayed behind for a better job in the borough. Even though they miss him and don't know when they'll see him again. Kai, when will I see you again? I turn back, and there across the street I see possibility and my heart flutters. Of course. Why didn't I think of this first? The museum. The museum is long, low, white, blind. Even its windows are made of frosted white opaque glass to keep the artifacts inside safe from the light. City Hall across the street has tall, clear windows. City Hall sees everything. Still, the museum might have something for me behind its tightly closed eyes. Hope quickens my step as I cross the street, gives me strength as I push open the enormous white doors.
Welcome, says a curator, sitting at a round white desk. Can I help you find anything?
I'm wandering, I say, trying to look relaxed. I have some extra time today.
And you came here, the curator says, pleased, puzzled. Wonderful. You might want to try the second level. Some of our most popular displays are up there. I don't want to draw too much attention to myself, so I nod and climb the steps, their metal echo reminding me painfully of Kai's feet on the stairs at the station. Don't think about that now. Stay calm. Remember coming here that time in first school, before Kai came to the Burrow? Back when we had time to consider the past, before we went to second school, where all that matters is the future. Remember walking into the dining hall in the basement of the museum with the other school children, all of us so excited to be eating somewhere new and different? Remember Xander's bright blonde head among the rest? The way he pretended to listen to the curator's speech but kept making jokes to the side that no one else could hear? Xander, if I leave him here, will another piece of my heart be torn away too? Of course it will. A sign points to the Hall of Artifacts, and I veer right, suddenly, wanting to see the display, wanting to see where they put all those things they took. Perhaps I'll see my compact, Xander's cufflinks, Bram's watch. I could bring him here one more time before we leave for the farmlands. I stop in the middle of the hall, realizing that none of those things are here. The other cases are still crammed with artifacts, but the new display is nothing but a long glass case, huge and empty. A sign in the middle of it, printed in lettered words that look so different from Kai's cursive, reads, "Additional artifacts coming soon." A light from above illuminates the sign in its empty, cavernous case. That sign could last forever in this sealed and pristine environment, like the scrap of my dress from the match banquet. But I've already broken the glass. I've given the green away. I've made my choice. I'm already dying without Kai here, and now I have to make sure I live to find him. I realize that our artifacts will likely never make it into the case. The sign is the only display there may ever be. I don't know what they've done with them. Perhaps they've sold them. Maybe they need the money to fund the wars that Kai has gone to fight. Now I know for myself that there is nothing left. I walk down the stairs into the basement, where they keep the glorious history of Oria Province, where I meant to go all along before the chance to glimpse what was lost distracted me from what must be found. I stand close to the glass and look at the map of our province with its city, farmlands, and rivers, listening to the footsteps on the marble floor behind me. A small, uniformed man comes to stand next to me.
"Would you like me to tell you more about the history of Oria?" he asks.
Our eyes meet, mine searching, his sharp and bright. I look at him and realize I will not sell the poem. I am selfish. Besides the scrap of fabric, it is all I had to give Kai, and we are the last two people in the world who know the whole thing. Even this is a dead end. Even this last idea of mine won't work. I could sell the poem, but it would buy me nothing. This isn't something I can buy. It's something I have to do. "No, thank you," I tell the man, even though I would like to know the true history of this place where I live. But I don't think anyone knows it anymore. Before I leave, I look once more at the geographic map of our society. There, in the middle of the map, fat and happy, sit the large, plump shapes of the provinces. And around their edges are all the outer provinces, the lines dividing them into sections, but none of them named. "Wait!" I call out to the man.